Willie and D. Mace, ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Adam Vingan in for Derek Mason today. Willie Donick from his aunt and uncle's farm in Ohio. Nick Frazier here with me in the studio. Willie, have you gotten into any, you know, farm stuff? I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. That's related to getting your hands dirty on the farm.
I didn't get the early. I was awakened by the sheep this morning.
Not a rooster, a sheep?
I was not asked to come out and shear sheep or anything like that by my Uncle Tim. When I was a kid, though, they've been here for over 40 years. When I was a kid, he did, after I hit the winning shot on the barnyard basketball, they got a hoop up against the barn here, and we had a big pickup game, and I hit the winning shot. He warned me if I hit another shot, he would throw me in the pond, which they have, and it's very swimmable, right? It's not like algae or anything like that. It's, you can swim, but I thought he was joking, but I called his bluff. I hit a shot. He picked me up with my shoes on and tossed me right into the pond, and I cried the rest of the day. I was like probably 8 years old or something like that. I was not happy with him. At the point, he thought it was pretty funny, and he felt a little guilty at that point. But it was a big drama in the family. So here we are all these years later.
Everything's okay. You mentioned barnyard sports. I just want quick shout out to backyard sports for those of a certain age like myself that played backyard baseball, the game on the PC. I think they are rebooting it online. And Willie, this is probably past your time playing video games, but you know, as a kid who grew up in the 90s and early PC games and the 8-bit graphics and such, well, more than 8-bit probably, but there was a game called Backyard Baseball, which was very popular with the kids, particularly one player, Pablo Sanchez. Nick knows what I'm talking about.
Pablo Game Boy.
Yeah. Pablo Sanchez. He was the ringer on the backyard baseball team. He had the backwards hat. He had like the best balance of stats. He was a great all-around player in backyard baseball.
He was your five-tool player.
Was he out
really
of the mold? Was he inspired by Benny the Jet Rodriguez from the Sandlot?
You know what? I don't know if the timelines match. I don't know when the timelines match up. Nick may have a better answer for that than me. But he was the player you wanted on your team. If you had first pick in backyard baseball, Pablo Sanchez is where it was at. And I guess I saw today on Twitter quickly, I think they're relaunching it. And I know I'll probably try to play it a little bit. But wow. I used to play it at my cousin's house.
That sounds very exciting. I did not play backyard baseball. I did play the RBI baseball. I don't know if you guys can go back to that on the old Sega. That was – or Nintendo. I guess it was Nintendo.
Nintendo, yeah.
That had RBI baseball, where they actually had the names of the major league players. They were just kind of dots on the field or you know, little, you know, nothing anywhere close to what you would have today. This was early 90s, you know, but it was Jesse Orosco against Don Baylor. You know, you had guys like that, or Jesse Orosco against Wally Joyner and guys like that. It was like the mid 80s teams that had these characters. It was an art form for sure, but you had to use theater of the mind to get through.
I'm looking to see when backyard baseball launched. It was definitely in the 90s. It was released in 1997, October 1997.
Okay. So in theory, Benny the Jet could have been sort of the prototype.
It could have been.
And
maybe it
that
was.
Pablo Sanchez was.
There's probably an oral history on the making of backyard baseball. And I will look for that at some point. But shout out Pablo Sanchez. It's great to have you back in our lives. Backyard baseball making a comeback. So when we had Tim Hasselbeck on in the previous segment, before we quickly talked about Ryan Johansson, I asked him about players who are going to play in the preseason game who might have to look behind them a little bit. They might need to have a big-time performance to solidify their starting spot. Well, as I said, I was unable to watch the Titans preseason game against the Seahawks over the weekend because I had eye surgery. And by the way, someone on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, asked if they could turn my bedroom into a man cave so I couldn't leave. That was very nice of them. I said if they paid for it, I would stay in it, which they laughed at. So you have to kill them with kindness. That's what I always say. But there was one player who had a big-time performance in the preseason win against the Seahawks that Brian Callahan was came out and said, we have our starter at that position. He was referring to the kicking position. Braden Narveson, and I've had to stop myself on multiple occasions of saying Arvidsson, just so you know. Braden Narveson had a huge game as the kicker for the Titans against the Seahawks. He kicked a 46-yard field goal to win it, and he kicked a 59-yarder with room to spare. And I thought this was it was incredibly impressive in and of itself. But I read on paulkaharski.com, and I hope I have this right if Paul is listening, it was the second longest field goal made at what is now known as Nissan Stadium. I believe Paul said Rod Baronis hit a 60-yarder. I want to say it was 2006. So I know
that was a famous one. That was a game winner on the last play of the game against the Colts, an enormous win for Vince Young, who was on his way to the Rookie of the Year that season. How times changed not that long after that. But that was a big day for the franchise because you were thinking they've got their quarterback. And what an amazing kick that was by the late Rod Baronis. But, wow. So that's the second longest one hit in that field. Now, there's turf now.
Yes.
Right? But that's still pretty significant. And they showed on the telecast that he had hit from quite a bit further out in the warmups, right? I think 65 or 66.
Now, did I see that the special teams coach had to talk Brian Callahan into taking that kick? He wanted to punt it?
I think so. I think that's right. I didn't see the detail on that, but I believe that's right.
So Braden Narveson kicks a 59-yarder. Now, the stakes are much different in a preseason game than in the game you're referring to with Baronis. But impressive nonetheless. But Brian Callahan, after the game, said, Nick's our starter. Nick Folk's our starter. And I know there's a financial aspect to that decision, I'm sure. I don't pretend to know the ins and outs of the NFL salary cap. I know it's malleable. I'm not going to say the F word, not the F word you're thinking of, but the F word as it relates to the salary cap from 2 to 6 p.m. on this station. But
right.
My question
is, I think that's a group of one that believes in that philosophy. That's
I know.
A group of one.
But my question is, why not Braden Narveson? I went back. I was curious during the break. I went back and looked at all of the kickers over the past five seasons who have attempted, not just made, but just attempted a field goal for the Tennessee Titans. And it's a who's who. Michael
right.
Badgley.
And Mike Vrabel had a field day right. on a recent podcast.
He did.
He kind of made a stand-up comedy routine out of that.
Michael Badgley, Randy Bullock, Nick Folk, Steven Gostkowski, Cody Parkey, Cairo Santos, Caleb Shudak, Sam Sloman. Yes, Ryan Succop. That's the list of kickers that have attempted a field goal for the Tennessee Titans in a regular season game over the past 5 years. So Nick Folk, if I'm not mistaken, this is the final year of his contract. Nick Folk is old. So
He's 39,
yes.
I believe.
My recovering eyes had to make sure that it was 39. But he's old, for football's sake. Now, kickers I know can last a little bit longer. But
right,
probably,
Gary Anderson, who is probably 65 now,
yeah.
I'm sure could hit from 40 and in pretty easily. Still.
Yes, but Nick Folk could not be the kicker next season. Perhaps it's most likely that Nick Folk won't be the kicker next season. So why
yeah,
not?
By the way, he will turn 40 in the middle of the season in November. So he will be a 40-year-old kicker before the season is over, Nick Folk.
So why not take a chance and invest in a young rookie kicker like Braden Narveson, straight out of NC State, 24 years old. Now, kickers, who knows with kickers, right? It's an inexact science, especially around here lately. but it's an inexact science. But why not take a chance on a 24-year-old? Maybe you find your kicker of the future. I know that, as always in the preseason, it happens in all sports. Players come out of nowhere. They make big plays in the preseason. Fans become attached to them. Oh, if we put that player on the practice squad, they're not going to make it through. And that we overvalue these players. But considering the issues that the Titans have had at kicker in recent years, why not take a shot on Braden Narveson? Clearly, the guy has talent. That's all I'm saying.
He's got talent. I'll give him that for sure. He is completely unproven at this point. Brian Callahan, we'll start with this. You know, he had some comments on it. He was very pleased for him, thought it was a great story, thinks he's doing well in the camp. But I think he is in a group of people, Adam, that are good enough to make the kicks, right? Or especially long kicks like that. The leg is part of it, right? But it's much more about being reliable week in and week out and hitting 85% of your kicks. You've got to do that to hold the job in the NFL. And then you've got, of course, when it's all on the line, you've got to make the big ones when they come up. That's way different than hitting a 59-yarder in a preseason game, right? So I think Narveson is showing. By the way, you said Arvidsson is tough. There was a Narveson, and of course, I'm an old baseball nut, right? There was a Chris Narveson that pitched for a long time. I was wondering if there's any relation between those two. I don't know the answer to that. He pitched for the Expos for a long time. So if you're a baseball nut, maybe that name is familiar. But he did say, Callahan did, that Narveson could become one of those guys that you develop for a couple years. He waits for a shot. You keep working on it, keep working on it. You break through, you get your opportunity. And then if you make the most of it, you can kick till you're 40, right? That's how most of these guys go. They're usually not handed a job the first year. Now, I will say this. A couple years ago when Ryan Stonehouse came on the scene, he was so impressive that they let Brett Kern go because Stonehouse, they thought long-term was the answer. And obviously he was younger and cheaper than Brett Kern, who was getting paid very well because he had earned it over a long, long period of time. But that being said, look, you just listed all of the nightmares that they've had at kicker. Not that those guys were all bad kickers. A lot of them latched on with somebody else. It just didn't work out.
And did very well after they left, which was the point absolutely of the Mike Vrabel stand-up act that he did on very the, I think well. It was the Pardon My Take podcast.
Yes, absolutely. But Folk kind of silenced all the critics last year. He literally only missed two kicks all of last year. He missed one field goal and one, one field goal, two extra points. All of last year. So he missed three kicks total. So look, it's a nice story, but I think Nick Folk is the guy this year, and he has gained the trust, right? There's not a, oh my God, is he going to make this? Or, oh man, I don't know if we can try this field goal because we don't trust our kickers. Nick Folk, to his credit, silenced all of that last year. Plus, with the new kickoff and the style of it, you don't really worry about that part of the equation as well, because it's a lesser thing now. The range, the ability to kick the ball into the end zone consistently, there's a much different technique now to kick off. So I would say Folk is going to be the guy. I would say this, though. You have to be looking, if you're Rand Carthon and Brian Callahan, down the road, you know, is Narveson going to be among the mix for the next kicker? You know, at some point, Folk is going to retire, right?
I would hope so. I mean, we all strive to retire, and you're right, Nick.
But kickers can last into their 40s.
So yes, they can.
No question. But unless Folk shows me that, like, he can't hit a 52, 53 yarder. Because look, do you have to hit a 59 yarder to hold a job in the NFL? No, it's nice to be able to do it. And I don't know what kind of range Folk still has, but he proved last year he can hit from outside of 50. Let's see, he was...
His long was 53 last season.
Yeah, and he was 5 for 6 from 50-plus last year. So, you know, I'll always remember we were talking about Jared. Jared went on this long thing. He's got no leg. He's got no leg. He's got no leg. He went into this diatribe when they signed Folk. He thought it was terrible that they signed Folk because he's got no leg. No leg.
Jared and thought something was immediately terrible. You're telling me this?
Immediately terrible. And he thought they were going to – he even thought – this is, again, Jared being Jared. We love Jared. He's right about a lot of things. But I love reminding everybody that sometimes, even though he's loud and loves to praise himself when he says, I told you that this happened, that he is wrong sometimes. And he did say that he thought they were going to keep two kickers last year, one for the kickoffs and long field goals, and Folk would kick the shorter field goals because Folk had, quote, no leg. And he proceeds to go 5 for 6 from 50-plus and hit 29 out of 30 field goals. So he silenced Jared and all the critics last year. But he is going to turn 40, and I do think you have to sort of keep an eye on long-term who might be the next guy so you don't have another musical chair situation.
Was Sloman the one that was delivering packages before kicking for the Titans, or am I thinking of someone differently?
I'm not sure. Sloman hit the big field goal at the end of the season the last year, the last game of the season in Houston to win a division. I think it was the COVID year, if I'm not mistaken. It was either 20 or 21 where he doinked it off of the upright, and it went in to win a really big game for them. So he had his moment in the sun.
I feel like our old friend Ryan Porth always used to make that joke. I don't know if it was Sloman. Maybe he was making it up. I don't know. I just remember him making that joke a lot. We do have one texter who says, kicking for a contract with your career on the line from 59 yards maybe worth as much as what the texter was trying to say as a 50-yarder to win a playoff game for a veteran. I mean, if he does not find a job here with that performance, Narveson could find a job somewhere else. And you're right, the job, Brian Callahan's right, the job is Nick Folk's. It makes sense. He was good for them last year after musical chairs for so many years at the kicking position for the Titans. It was a massive blunder of errors over and over again.
I was at the game a couple years ago. It was the season opener where Michael Badgley had to come in. I think somebody, I can't remember who got hurt. Somebody got hurt, and they signed Badgley off the street. And he had NFL experience. He missed an extra point to start the game. He missed another kick, and he was cut after one game. And then all of a sudden, by the end of the year, he's kicking for, I think, the Colts. And now I believe, is he not still kicking for the Lions? Like, he's the main guy for the Lions, and he's been very successful for him.
Was that Badgley?
Yes.
Badgley, yes.
He actually got hurt, I believe.
He was booed right out of the stadium after one game for the Titans. It is crazy how things can be it's sort of a carousel of kickers. It's a phenomenal position when you think about how many guys are talented enough to make the kicks, right? But the mental toughness that you have to have to almost perfection is expected from these guys, right?
Yes.
At all times. You've got to make these kicks. It's not easy, right? But there's a lot of guys that can do it in practice, but there's not as many guys that you trust in a big game to do it consistently. And at the end of the day, if you don't hit 85% of your kicks, you will not have a job.
So a couple of texters have said, I'm confusing Sloman with a punter. Matt says Trevor Daniel, the delivery guy was Dickson County legend Trevor Daniel. So I knew there was a special teamer for the Titans who was working for a delivery service prior to being signed by the Titans to kick it in an NFL game. So I had it mostly right. So I appreciate
the take. Don't let facts get in the way of a good story.
No, that's what you learn. That's what you learn on the first day of journalism school. 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We'll get back into the Titans preseason finale against the New Orleans Saints coming up this weekend. Which Titans starters are under the most pressure to perform in this game? Who might have a tenuous grip on a starting spot? Someone coming up from behind them who can push them for that spot? We'll get into that next. Adam Bingen, Willie Donick, ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Be a hero and save a life this Wednesday at the 11th annual Williamson County Battle of the Badges Blood Drive. Every 2 seconds, someone is in need of blood, and in the last 11 years, this drive alone has collected over 3,000 units of blood, saving up to 9,000 lives. The drive will be held at John P. Holt Brentwood Library Wednesday from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. 102.5 The Game will be on hand from noon to 2 with swag to give away and a chance to win free concert tickets. Adam Vingan in for Derek Mason today. Willie Donick, Nick Frazier here with you. I confirmed during the break it was indeed Trevor Daniel, the punter, who was the ex-FedEx driver. I found an old tweet from our friend Jonathan Hutton, who said that Trevor Daniel was driving for FedEx when John Robinson called him to come in for a tryout. He dropped off two more packages and drove to the facility. I appreciate that. He had to
finish the job.
The chance
it's
of a
like
lifetime.
Lou Brown.
Yes.
Lou Brown in the movie Major League, you know, when he said he was given a chance to manage the then Indians, right, in the movie Major League. He said, I got to get back to you. I got a guy over here who wants to buy a set of white wall tires. Right. In other words, the answer was not an overwhelming yes. I'll be there right away. I got to finish the job.
So I appreciate Trevor Daniel finishing his route. Now, I don't know if FedEx has the same oath as the United States Postal Service, but I appreciate the dedication to the job. So at least I was right that it was a Titan special teamer that was delivering packages. I just had the wrong player. So the Titans will be in New Orleans this weekend. Very jealous. Always love going to New Orleans. They'll be there for their preseason finale against the Saints Sunday afternoon, I believe, a 1 o'clock kickoff for that game. So I asked this to Tim Hasselbeck, and I'm curious for your thoughts, Willie. So as Brian Callahan has said, and we've discussed, the Titans offense, at least, will get probably three series. He would also like to see some of the defensive starters, the ones that haven't been ruled out, like Simmons, Landry, Snead, etc., to get them some playing time as well. When I'm looking at the Titans' most recent unofficial depth chart, and when you think about the players who are expected to play, starters, projected starters, who are going to play in this game for a significant amount of time, at least according to Brian Callahan, is there a player that comes to mind as one who really needs to prove his worth in this game to perhaps keep his grip on his starting job?
Well, I don't think it will be to keep his grip on a starting job to begin with. But I do want to see, and look, we can all kid ourselves and act like if he has a bad game, it's going to affect him from the start. I don't think that's going to be the case. But a guy I'm very curious about, and I would like to see get a couple of reps and maybe make me feel good about what's going on, is Tyler Boyd. Because I do think everybody is seeing the rise of Jaquan Jackson. I think both Derek said something really interesting yesterday. D. Mace is not on the show with us today. He'll be back with us tomorrow. But he said he reminds me of himself, right? Derek Mason, a young, shifty wide receiver, you know, good hands, quick acceleration after the catch, good precise routes. And I don't think Jaquan Jackson, and great in the return game, right? Jaquan Jackson looks like he's carving out a role on the team. And we discussed how big that would be yesterday to hit on a sixth round pick. Maybe not a star right away, but a useful piece right out of the gate as a sixth rounder. And he does play in the same spot as Tyler Boyd, that slot. And I don't think on day one he'll be ready to start in front of Boyd. Boyd is going to get every chance to be the starter, but he's on a one-year deal. He's an aging player who's been very productive over the long haul, but his production dropped some last year. In fact, I think we have a clip from the GM shuffle. There was a discussion going on about the Bengals and replacing Tyler Boyd, and Michael Lombardi had, you know, pretty strong opinion on how replaceable Boyd is at this point. But Boyd was brought in, I think, to be a good influence on younger wide receivers like Burks and a guy like Jackson. And so I'm hoping in a perfect scenario that Jackson learns a lot from Boyd, that Boyd is productive for a while, but eventually Jackson's talent and youth will surpass Boyd for the long term. So I think in the meantime, Boyd has got to, you know, push himself. Hopefully he's getting some back pressure, and that brings out the best in him. Because I don't think anybody should be in the comfort zone. So I think Boyd's a guy to look at, not only on Sunday's game, but also early in the season, right, as the season progresses. Because I hope that they've got better options over the long haul.
And, Willie, you said we had a clip from the – is it Michael Lombardi's podcast?
Yeah, Michael Lombardi, the GM shuffle. He was talking about that they started a discussion about Ja'Marr Chase, who, you know, he's wheeling and dealing, trying to get the big deal, which he will get eventually. He's got the leverage, right? Leverage is something we'll talk about a lot with the Askarov situation in the next hour. But Ja'Marr Chase is sort of holding in, then didn't show up for practice for one day. They were talking about what they have to try to, with him in the stable, the situation with T. Higgins, who is in the last year of his contract, and who they have. But Boyd came up as part of the discussion as a guy that they're trying to replace.
And this year he's going to be more dynamic than ever, because with the Burton, with Jermaine Burton drafted from Alabama playing on the outside, they now can move Chase inside. You know, they had Tyler Boyd in there, right? You know, everybody, oh, Tyler Boyd's a good player. Tyler Boyd averaged 10 yards a catch. You know, it's, you know, it's so ridiculous how people don't even, you know, a receiver catches a lot of balls and all of a sudden, you know, he's a great player. Well, look, if you look at his numbers and you see, like, how hard is it to replace his 98 targets for 67 catches, 6.8 yards per target. He only had 28 first downs. And, you know, how hard is that to replace?
So you see where I'm going with this, Adam, is Boyd has had some great years. Charles Davis, who I love as a person, I think he's great. He's a very solid professional announcer. But when he's doing these Titans games in the preseason, he always paints the positive side of things, which, as you know, Adam, there's a special place in my heart for people like that, right?
Glass I don't know if you've heard full. This. I don't know if you've heard this or not, Willie, but you're too positive when you're doing
broadcasting.
That's what
everybody says,
when
right?
You're doing Predators games, you're too dang positive.
Well, Charles Davis said, hey, Tyler Boyd has had 2,000 yards receiving seasons as a member of the Bengals, right? And he did, but that was 2018 and 2019. That's a long time ago. 10 yards per catch, which you heard Lombardi say, is the lowest of Tyler Boyd's career. And the success rate, the completion rate, right, the catch rate was only 68%, which is a little low for a slot receiver. It should be over 70, I think, in a perfect world, because you're not getting passes thrown to you down the field as much. They tend to be high percentage passes, right, when you're coming from the slot. And you want a little more than 10 yards per catch, I would say. But let me say this. Everything has been completely positive from the coaching staff all the way through. Tyler Boyd has made a great impression, I think, in camp with his makeup, his ability to understand the position and be able to teach it to others. And that's valuable when you have a new offense, right? So I think he's got an intangible quality. But I think he's going to have to prove that he can still play, right? The Titans have a littered history of veteran wide receivers who have come in past their prime and have not been able to do anything close to what they did in previous years. So 667 yards, as you heard Michael Lombardi say, that's pretty replaceable on paper. That's what the Bengals are hoping for. That's why they let Boyd walk. So I think Boyd hopefully has a chip on his shoulder and can be productive. But the Titans, I think, have other options there. And this is a rebuilding team, right? This isn't a team that is trying to win this year. They're looking for pieces that they can build for the next 3-4 seasons as they put pieces around their quarterback and enter into a new stadium in a couple of seasons.
The player that comes to mind for me, and like you, Willie, this player is not someone who's in jeopardy of losing their starting job per se. Like, this is not a player who's going to become a backup and become irrelevant to what the Titans do on Sundays. But I'm intrigued. I don't know if that's the right word. I'm really interested in seeing what happens with Chig Okonkwo, because he is listed on the depth chart, and he has been listed on the depth chart, if I'm not mistaken, as a co-starter with Josh Wiley. Now, I believe Josh Wiley is in concussion protocol, but I don't think he's been ruled out of the preseason game against the Saints. But Okonkwo and Wiley go about their
job. Yeah, because he's been on there. And so I think there is a chance he could get cleared. If I remember what Callahan said correctly, because Wiley's an interesting one too, because his availability, right? He's had his moments. So you're absolutely right. Keep going on Chig, because I am intrigued with Chig.
So Chig Okonkwo, this time last year, I was buying stock in Chig Okonkwo. I thought how he played in the 2022 season, when given more of an opportunity, he was efficient. I really liked what I saw from Chig Okonkwo. I was buying stock in Chig Okonkwo. Relative to that, he was disappointing last season, and he was the starting tight end. Now you have Josh Wiley coming on. I've read a lot of positive things about Josh Wiley throughout training camp. Now, another player I've heard a lot about in training camp is David Martin Robinson. Now, I don't think Martin Robinson is going to really push Wiley and Okonkwo for that much playing time, I would assume, but he could be in the rotation. He's someone that's going to be a really interesting decision that the Titans have to make when it comes to putting their roster together. But to see Chig Okonkwo go from the number one tight end to potentially sharing that role with Josh Wiley, I'd like to see more from Chig. I think last year left me wanting more. I was expecting more from him. It didn't happen for whatever reason. He's going to be a big part of this team. He's going to be on the field a lot, maybe not as much as he was last season. I think I quickly looked up, he played like 65, 66% of the snaps last year on offense. I don't know if that's going to happen this year, but Wiley has come on strong. And if Wiley continues to impress, perhaps we see instead of Okonkwo / Wiley, maybe we see Wiley / Okonkwo.
You know, as you say that, Adam, I'm still trying to familiarize myself with how the tight ends are going to be used in this offense, because I think it will be different than what we've seen the last few years when you had Derrick Henry as the primary weapon of the offense, right? They used a lot, and couple that with severe issues on the offensive line. And you put it all together, you had a lot of two tight end sets and sometimes even three tight end sets to try to protect the quarterback and also get as many big dudes in there to block for Derrick Henry, to put it in simple terms, right? You see a lot more three wide receivers. We just talked about Tyler Boyd. He's going to play a lot. Brian Callahan was asked about the tight end position over the weekend, and he said, look, we're going to still use our share of personnel where we use two tight ends, 12 personnel, one back, two tight ends. So he said, we're going to use our share of 12, right? As opposed to 11, where there's one back and one tight end and three wide receivers. I've been under the assumption that you're going to see a lot more three wide receivers than they have by far in past years. So what does that do to the tight ends? How do we see Chig in this offense as opposed to what he was asked to do before? I'm still not completely clear on how that's going to look. Because in the past, I think there was a world where Wiley and Chig would be on the field at the same time a lot, because they were using two tight ends, right? And they both have different strengths. Okonkwo has been, Adam, an enigma to me. He can really run. There's some things that he does very, very well, but he is not a natural pass catcher. And so I'm wondering if he can make strides in that area. He can get open against a lot of matchups, and he's big. Is he the right kind of blocker for this blocking scheme? Is he better in this offense? That's what I want to see. And I don't know if we're going to know that on Sunday, but I do think he's a guy to circle as big question marks on what are you going to see in this new era of Titans football. How does he fit?
Great point. 615-737-1025. Which player or players that are listed as starters for the Titans will you be keeping your eye on in the Titans preseason finale against the New Orleans Saints over the weekend. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, as you may have heard, I underwent an operation and I had eye surgery over the weekend. I saw something when my vision came to. I saw something that I thought was so surreal, I didn't think I was actually seeing it when I regained my vision and I could read the headline. We'll get to that next. Adam Vingan, Willie Donick, ESPN, 1025, 1063, The Game.
Squirrel is limping. I mean, I didn't even know a squirrel could limp. So Brett Favre runs over and helps that little guy. Brett Favre made that squirrel a little cast. And then he made him little squirrel crutches. I mean, who makes a squirrel crutches? I'll tell you who does. Brett Favre does it. And most people would have sent that squirrel on its way. But Brett Favre was worried that squirrel wouldn't get away. Maybe he's being chased by a predator or a bigger squirrel that wanted whatever that squirrel.
Oh, man. That was Frank Caliendo doing his notable John Madden impression. Adam Vingan in for Derek Mason today. Willie Donick here, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. So, Willie, as I mentioned before the break, I saw a headline once I had my vision mostly back, and when I read it, I stopped.
How is it now? Is it back? Is the vision totally back now?
It fluctuates. Okay. It's a little bit, it's a little bit better today than it was yesterday. It's good enough that I could be here and operate my computer and all of the things we have to do to get this show off the ground. So it would be kind of interesting to do the show blind, but I don't think Chase would like that very much. But I came across a headline that I didn't think was real when I read it, but it's real, and it's at a Variety. Nicolas Cage to play NFL icon John Madden in David O. Russell's biopic. So according to Variety, Nick Cage, we all know Nick Cage, will portray John Madden, the legendary American football coach and sports commentator and director David O. Russell's upcoming biographical drama, Madden. And it's an inspired choice, to say the least. I believe Frank Caliendo was in fact trending when this news broke late last week because everyone thought, why not Frank Caliendo? Well, you know, there's a difference between doing a parody and trying to do an actual biopic. And by the way, I believe it's biopic, not biopic. I'm pretty sure it's biopic. So it doesn't rhyme with myopic. But Nick Cage playing John Madden, my first thought was, as with most things as they pertain to Nick Cage, it's just so crazy, it just might work. That's how I feel about the idea of Nicolas Cage playing John Madden. The idea of it is enough to probably get me into the theater to see this film.
Now, this biopic, is this not a comedy, right?
It is not a comedy.
Even though John Madden is hilarious, right? He was a great character growing up that went beyond great football coach and great analyst, right? He did the comical light beer from Miller commercials for years. And that being said, right, he's about fun and comedy, but he did not like the Frank Caliendo caricature, right? In fact, Caliendo was so good and funny, right? I think Madden took it the wrong way. Like he thought it was, And now you can't watch a game that John Madden did and see the brilliance, right? I think it's too, you get him too confused with Frank Caliendo. It's kind of like when Will Ferrell does Harry Carey.
Yes.
Right? You lose what made Harry Carey a great baseball announcer, right? John Madden was a great football announcer. And I think sometimes the comedy routine pulls you away from that. So that being said, Caliendo obviously is not going to play John Madden in a movie.
No.
Right? So who is the guy? Like, Nick Cage doesn't have the body type of John Madden.
Cage is the kind of guy who will put on 200 pounds to play okay. Nick, to play, I was going to say, play Nick Cage. I mean, he might put on 200 pounds just because he wants to. But Nick Cage seems like the kind of actor who would put on a ton of weight in a healthy amount of time in order to play John Madden. Now, you mentioned Will Ferrell. I thought this was interesting. Buried in this article. Now, by the way, one thing I think I saw, so I reserve the right to be wrong. This film might be focused on Madden's time coaching the Raiders. Like I primarily focused.
So it's a younger John Madden.
Yes, a younger John Madden. Now, if that's the case, there should be a separate film where it's like, remember the film, I think it was last year, Air, that came out, the sports biography, you know, the biographical movie about the creation of the Air Jordan. There should be a separate
interesting movie.
There should be a separate movie about the creation of the Madden video game, just to see the scene where like the nerdy kid tries to explain to John Madden what a video game is. And like that would be worth, I mean, you can make multiple movies. David O. Russell can make multiple movies. But you mentioned Will Ferrell. Buried in this article, according to Variety, the filmmaker was reportedly considering Will Ferrell to star in the film before Cage was cast. There's another interesting name that was reportedly considered to play John Madden, and that was Hugh Jackman, which I think would be an even odder choice than Nick Cage. The appeal of Hugh Jackman to me, Willie, is that he seems game for anything. Like, give you like any type of role, even if it's not his, like, not his type, he will play against type. I can't, like, both of them are hard to see, but I feel like Nick Cage, I could see Nick Cage playing John Madden a lot more, you know, brilliantly than I think Hugh Jackman would.
I'm not, absolutely. I'm not going to write off Nick Cage. So let's see if Nick Frazier has another casting. This is another casting what ifs, or a big part of a podcast that I like listening to about movies that Bill Simmons does called The Rewatchables. And he goes back through this kind of discussion, a movie that we've seen. He goes back to the research and finds some of the other actors that were up for a part that didn't get it, and it has kind of like a what if this person got it. So who's your cast nominee, Nick, for John Madden?
I'll say this before, if they were alive, I would say it'd be John Candy, but since he's not alive, I'm gonna go with Brendan Fraser, and he's not related to me at all.
And he put on a ton of weight to play a role recently, didn't he?
Literally, an unbelievable amount of weight. What's it called? Whale?
The Whale?
Something like that. Somebody completely.
I didn't
obese,
even recognize him.
Right? Yeah. And that's the thing with, like, you cast a certain, I guess, celebrity of some sort, an actor, you kind of have to have some facial similarities, I guess. Because if you have somebody that just, like, Nicolas Cage, for example, like, you know who that is. Like, if they're going to play John Madden, it's going to be kind of hard to depict that as John Madden in the movie, but you know it's Nicolas Cage. So if you have a guy like Brendan Fraser, like, yeah, people know who he is, but he has that, I guess, morphism capability when it comes to acting, where he's able to put on some weight or lose some weight, kind of change his facial structure in some capacity.
So Matt on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, sorry, Willie, says the only proper actor for Madden is John Malkovich.
Ah, can he do, at this stage, could he do a young John Madden?
Ben says John Goodman. That's another good one.
John Goodman was the first guy I thought of. I think it'd be perfect. But John Goodman, how old is John now?
If John Goodman
were doing John Madden, the announcer, at that stage of life, that might be an easier sell.
Yeah,
20 years ago.
John Goodman is 72.
John Goodman would be the absolute 100% guy to do it.
John Goodman is 72 years old.
Yeah, so John Goodman, though, would be playing a, like, John Madden was one of the youngest coaches in the league at the time, right? The early 70s, the 70s Raiders basically was his run. And he won the Super Bowl in the 76 season. And he was, I think when he got the job, he was like 39 or something, right?
I'd have to look. By the way, Matt says he was joking about John Malkovich. But, you know, if Nick Cage can play.
John Malkovich is a great actor. I'm not going to. If Nick Cage can do it, John Malkovich could probably pull it off.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, Will Ferrell would get into the too much of the parody thing, like Caliendo.
Yes.
You mentioned the Harry Carey. That's a perfect example. If you're trying to serious this thing up, get some Oscar consideration, Nick Cage might be the way to go. But it is.
And then who plays Al Davis is another, like, that. Oh, that's another huge casting part
question.
Of this.
Yeah, someone just mentioned
him. And who plays Kenny Stabler? That's another going to be a great casting.
You know what? You know what? 615-737-1025. If you have answers to all of those questions, who would you have play John Madden Al Davis and Kenny Stabler in this upcoming biopic by David O. Russell. Nick Cage reportedly cast to play John Madden in this upcoming biopic. Who would you have cast in the major roles for this biopic? 615-737-1025. We'll read your answers on the other side. Adam Vingan, Willie Dunick here, 1025-1063 The Game.